Welcome to Middle Age Can Be Your Best Age, the show designed to help make middle age your prime time of life by defying the notion that once you reach 40, 50, or even 60 years old, your crowning achievements are all behind you. Regardless of whether you're just approaching 40 or are firmly entrenched in your middle years, it's time to launch your very own personal journey toward a joyful and purpose-filled second half of life. Each week, host Roy Richards, an expert on midlife renewal and author of A Midlife Challenge, Wake Up, will discuss the challenges common to middle age and help guide you to a brighter tomorrow. Now, here's Roy.
No matter what your income level, most North Americans are anxious about money. How about you? Will you have enough to send your kids to college? What about retirement? Will you or your spouse outlive your assets? Well, here's good news. My first guest is here today to help you and I become financially literate and to free us once and for all from money anxiety. And at 21, Thembi Buthelezi, our guest, made big bucks as a Forex trader. Then she lost it all in seven trades. Subsequently, she learned insider trading secrets while working at a Wall Street hedge fund. She retired at a young age and founded her Stock Market for Beginners school, and she's author of the book Beginner's Guide to Investing, How to Make Money in Stocks in 3 Easy Steps, and she helps people like you and me build our financial literacy muscles so that we can all retire wealthy, understand the stock market, and create a plan to retire rich. And given the U.S. stock market lately, she's here at a most opportune time. All of us, even somewhat experienced investors, can use some help in this topsy-turvy market, developing, as she calls it, our investing cojones. And hello, Thembi, and welcome to Middle Age Can Be Your Best Age.
Oh, thank you so much for having me. I'm so excited to be here.
Well, let's begin with the basics. In your book promo, you promised to reveal one stupid money question every one of us should ask ourselves once a week for 1 year that will enable us to retire rich. Please enlighten us. What is that question?
Yes, I'd be happy to. So here's the thing. I think as human beings, we feel ashamed when we don't think we know enough.
Yeah.
So then we don't ask questions about our money. And this is your money. You should be engaged and interested in what's happening with your money.
Yeah.
So what I usually teach my clients is to ask, if you're working with a financial advisor, especially when the market is like really, you know, scary as it is right now,
yeah,
you should be asking your financial advisor about the market cycles. From 2009 to 2015, we've been in a very strong bullish market.
Yeah.
However, what goes up has to come down. So
yes,
you've got to ask your financial advisor, how do we rebalance my portfolio? And if they don't know, it's probably not working.
Then you've got the wrong advisor, right?
Definitely, yes.
Well, the subtitle of your book, Beginner's Guide to Investing, is How to Make Money in Stocks in 3 Easy Steps. Without going into great detail, what are the 3 steps that a beginner should take to ensure that he or she will make money on stocks and become wealthy over time?
Okay, sure. So here's the when people look at the stock market, they think, oh my gosh, scary monster, you know, it's going to take all my money. And the stock market is not really that scary. I mean, I usually say there are 3 participants in the stock market, and people think, you know, the stock market is all about numbers. It's not.
Yeah.
It's about emotions. It's about opinion. So
yeah,
there's 3 participants, and it's usually the hogs, the sheep, and the professionals. The professionals always make money. The hogs and sheep always get slaughtered. Why? Because they never ask the right questions. So that is the first step. You have to understand that you can be a professional investor by just educating yourself. Read a book. Attend a seminar. You know, it's really imperative. This is your money. Second step is to fall in love with charts. Charts are the footprints of money in the markets. So when you look at a chart can only tell you 3 things. A stock is going up, a stock is going down, or it's doing nothing, right? So if the stock is going down, don't buy the stock. It's that simple. And then step number 3 is always protect yourself from a down market. Always protect yourself. Have a protection plan in place.
Yeah, that's so crucial. But so many people fail to do that. And well, you spent several years on Wall Street. Can you give us a piece of advice on how to pick stocks like a pro? I guess the simple answer would be pick a stock that's going to go up. But
a lot of people want to pick stocks, right? They're like, give me the right stock that's going to move, like Tesla. If you look at a chart of a stock, you can find free charts on Yahoo Finance. If you look at a chart of a stock, it will tell you, I'm going up or I'm going down, don't buy me. Yeah. So that's why I always encourage investors, even if you're a beginner investor, make sure that you go onto Yahoo Finance and look at the chart of the stock that you want to buy. Don't just buy the stock because somebody gave you a tip. That's the worst thing ever.
If your brother-in-law tells you he knows a great little penny stock, it just recently went public, but they have some great technique and probably high-tech stock that's going to make big bucks and you should jump in, you probably shouldn't listen to that guy.
Penny stocks are very dangerous. Don't trade penny stocks. Oh, my gosh. I've had horror stories. Some of my clients are like, oh, my gosh, I lost $30,000 trading penny stocks. I'm like, what have you been doing? Penny stocks are just so dangerous. I don't remember. Did you see the movie Boiler Room?
I may have years ago.
Yeah. It was a movie on traders that used to sell penny stocks to people.
Yeah.
And penny is always pump and dump. Stay away from penny stocks.
Yeah, that's true. Well, in your book, you have a chapter titled, You Will End Up Dead Broke If You Disobey This Trend. What is this trend that you should never disobey?
Okay, so the trend is if a stock is going up, so there's only three messages that a stock can give you. I am going up, I am going down, I am doing nothing.
Yeah.
If you go against the trend, so let's say a stock's trend is going down and you just see red bars on that chart, that means the stock, Wall Street is selling that stock. If you go and buy that stock, you are going to lose everything. That's how I lost all of my money when I was really young and when I was really starting out in this industry, because I went against the trend. I thought I knew more than the Wall Street traders. Little did I know, I lost a lot of money.
it's funny how startup gamblers that basically think they know it all and are smarter than Wall Street make all these big bucks, but then they generally, just like so many gamblers in the casinos, just go a little too far.
I usually
become
say
invincible.
That's very true. When I started, I was young, right? I was like, oh, I know everything I made. Mm-hmm. And here's the funny thing with the markets is that the markets allow you to be a drunken gambler for a little bit, and they reward you. And then as soon as you think, oh, I'm invincible, that's when the market takes all of your money. So I think education is very important. Everyone should be educated about even if it's just basic education about what's happening on Wall Street.
Well, you emphasize the importance of developing and having in place an investment plan before you plunge into the stock market. Let's say you're in your early 50s, you have $5,000 now to invest in stocks, and you aim to retire rich at age 65. What are some of the elements that should make up your solid 13-year investment plan? I know we're not going to go into any great detail, but just what are some of the things you should consider in developing that plan?
Yeah, so I think it depends on your risk tolerance. If you've got $5,000and you don't have a 401k, well, the thing is, I don't think that the stock market is going to make you rich in 10 years, right?
Unless you buy a
stock like Tesla and it goes up like 300 points. However, I think if you've got very little money, you should be invested in mutual funds. I think I don't particularly like mutual funds that much. They don't move that much. They don't give that much profit back. However, if you don't want to lose your money, mutual funds are a little safer than individual stocks. I invest in individual stocks because they move a lot more and they give me more reward. So it just depends on your risk tolerance and how much money you have.
Yeah. But you should definitely, I guess, have a plan to continually invest over that period, because you're not really going to get rich, like you said, on $5,000 only. You've got to keep putting money back in or in a disciplined manner, keep building the funds up to work for you.
Definitely. If you have more money in your investment account, you can make bigger profits, right? So a person who has $50,000 can easily make $10,000 a month, but a person who's got $5,000, you know, you probably could make $500 to $1,000 a month. So it just depends how much money you have to begin investing with, and that will determine your profits.
Yeah, I guess I was a little bit optimistic to say you can turn $5,000 into wealth, however you define that, within 13 years. But
I mean, that is totally possible. Yeah. The trick is, do not take out, so don't spend the profits that you make. So if you make $1,000, reinvest that $1,000. So now build your trading account. Now you, instead of $5,000, you have $6,000. So if you keep reinvesting your profits back into the market, you can end up having a really big trading account and then being able to make quite a lot of money.
Well, I like in your book how you talk about that, and we all know this, that we're all going to lose money on some trades. And you mentioned a target of like making money on maybe 70% of your trades and losing money on 20 to 30%. But there are ways that you can limit your losses so that your losses are small and your potential investment gains are large. I guess there are ways to do that, right, to limit those losses.
Yeah, and that's what I was saying when we first started. I said there are hogs, sheep, and professionals. Professionals always make money because they always know their I can't take the pain number. So when you first buy a stock, you've always got to know what is that price where if the stock does not go in your direction and it starts falling, you're going to get out. That's how you protect yourself.
Yeah.
But with hogs and sheep, they just buy a stock and they go, oh, my gosh, I think I'm going to retire rich. I don't know. You know. And when the stock doesn't work, they wonder why and they lose a lot of money. So you've always got to protect yourself. It's called a stop price. Everybody has got to have a stop price when you buy a stock.
Yeah, that's for sure. Well, we all know how volatile the U.S. stock market has been lately. Dow up 688 one day, down 400 another, that kind of crazy thing. Or it's down 688 and up 400, I think, recently. But as a beginning investor, can you make money in a crazy market like this, or should you stay on the sidelines until more stability returns?
Yeah, great question. Look, if you don't have any education, you've never read a book, you've never taken a seminar, I think you should stay out of the markets right now because the markets are crazy.
Yeah.
I, however, love it when the markets are like this. The money is so easy to make. It's volatility moves price. So when there's volatility in the market, there's a lot of money. However, if you don't have any education or you don't have any experience investing, I think this time you should stay out of the market.
Yeah, I think so. Well, let's say you're a doctor, a plumbing contractor, you deliver the mail, whatever. You have a full-time job with little, if any, time during the day to monitor the market and buy and sell stocks. Certainly, you're not going to be a day trader, but is it still possible to have a good investment plan and execute it when you don't have a lot of time during the day to work on that?
Yeah, definitely. Most of my clients, actually 90% of my clients, are still gainfully employed. You can invest by spending 2 to 5 hours a week in the market. So I think everyone has 2 to 5 hours, really, to look for stocks, to plan your trades. Because, you know, if you are full-time employed, you don't have time to be looking at the markets. However, you can buy a stock on Monday and get out on Friday.
The great thing is now that with the Internet, it's so much easier to execute orders and, buy if type orders and sell if such and such so that you don't have to be in front of the phone all the time to call your broker to do something.
Exactly. You could do it on your iPhone. It's so easy. You just download the app and you can see the markets.
Yeah.
That's what I do when I'm on the road.
Well, let's talk a little bit about your book, Beginner's Guide to Investing. In one or two sentences, what distinguishes your book from all the other investment advice books out there? And there are a ton of them.
So mine is more focused on technical analysis. What does technical analysis mean? It means the study of charts. Charts never lie.
Yeah.
So I love the study of charts. So if you want to understand how Wall Street works and you want to see the professionals buying and selling stocks, you have to study charts. And that's what distinguishes my books from theory. Oh, you know, this company is going to have great revenue. We don't know that a company is going to have great revenue, but when you look at a chart, you know, you can
fundamental
tell.
Analysis is not for somebody that wants to, you know, invest part-time and do that kind of stuff like the pros do. But, you know, I love the statement, and I think it was one of the recommendations on Amazon says it only takes half an hour a month to monitor the market and decide what stocks to buy and sell. And I also like the comment that your book uses advanced strategies that are described in other books, but in very simplified instructions. And I love the fact that we beginners can understand what you're talking about rather than going into all these technical terms that lose you when you try to understand them.
Definitely. I mean, investing and financial literacy is scary as it is, right? Who wants to learn all of those terms?
Yeah.
So I'm a kind of girl like, let's just bring it way down to like street level, you know, like layman's people's language. So that's why I made it really simple, because I wanted more people to understand the markets. I'm passionate about the markets. Let's all be passionate about the markets and make obnoxious amounts of money in the process.
Yeah. Yeah, well, where should we go to preview and purchase your book, A Beginner's Guide to Investing? What's the best place to find it?
The best place to actually find my book would be on my website at stockmarketforbeginnersschool.com. On the side there, on the, you know, when you get to the homepage, you can actually click on my link there, and it will take you either to Amazon or there's another place where you can get the book. But if you just go to my website, there's a lot of content, free content that you can read there on my website. And if you, you know, subscribe to my newsletter, you can get a video course on how to make your first $1,000 investing in stocks.
Oh,
and you could read my book there.
Yeah, so if you wanted to get additional advice beyond the book, that's also where you'd go to sign up for some of your advice and your school programs that you have there. But that website has some dashes in it, doesn't it? Like stock-market for beginners.
No. You could just go to stockmarketforbeginnersschool.com without the dashes.
That's funny, because I found dashes when I went there, but I guess you only have to. But anyway, that's stockmarketforbeginnersschool.com. In conclusion, at middle age, all of us want to retire rich or at least financially stress-free with sufficient assets to enjoy our golden years, and we certainly want to help our kids through college. And if you're like me, you're probably inundated with offers over the Internet of foolproof investment advice and systems and all this kind of stuff. Just follow their recommendations, and you're guaranteed to make big money fast. You can't lose. And I've tried a couple of them and consistently lost. Fortunately, I was using fake paper trading money because I didn't have the guts to invest real money. But wouldn't it be great to understand the tricks of the trade and have the confidence of a pro so that you know some of the same technical methods that professional investors use, and so that you had the confidence to make trades with the odds in your favor, which is what those charts will give you. And, of course, from time to time you'll lose money on a trade, but you'll hedge your bets to limit your losses. And bottom line, you'll never grow rich without an investment plan and without the courage to execute it. And you can prepare yourself and confidently lay out your ground rules through Tembi Buthelezi's book, Beginner's Guide to Investing. And I highly recommend you visit her website today, stockmarketforbeginnersschool.com. And thank you, Tembi, for the sound advice.
Thank you so much for having me on your show. Thank you so much. I'm so grateful.
And now let's all go out and begin working on our wealthy retirement. I'm looking forward to it already. Just have to earn the money in the meantime. And thank you for joining us. Well, it's autumn, and for many of us, our sons and daughters will be heading off to college, maybe just starting their first year. And others of us have one or more teenagers in their junior or senior years of high school, heck, maybe even sophomore year. Along with them, you're beginning to plan for college. And as we all know, higher education these days is far from cheap. A few years back, our daughter Kristen attended Rhodes College, a small selective liberal arts college in Memphis, and I just looked it up on the CNN money calculator, and Rhodes College now has a total one-year annual cost, tuition, fees, room, and board of $55,733. An estimated four-year cost after receipt of typical grant and scholarship of $118,000, and our son Jeff went to the University of Iowa. but that has a four-year cost after grants and scholarships of $80,200. And looking back now, I still don't know how my wife Glory and I did it, but they did get through in 4 years and graduated. But of course, not all students graduate in 4 years, so throw in another $20,000 or so. And what if you have more than one child attending college at the same time? Obviously, financing a degree has become a major factor in selecting a college and getting your money's worth out of it. And given the cost of attending, will your son or daughter be able to afford the college of his or her choice? Perhaps even worse, will your scholar be forced to drop out before obtaining a degree because the funds run out? And upon graduation, will your offspring be burdened with the humongous student debt that may hamper quality of life for years to come? And another challenge is you parents dip into savings to finance your children's college, you may wind up with little or nothing left for retirement. But I have a guest today, Brad Baldridge, who can help you through the thorny thicket of college finances. And Brad is a certified financial planner and a college funding consultant, specializes in late-stage college funding, and he provides customized planning using the latest financial aid, tax, cash flow, and academic strategies. Lectures extensively to groups and high schools on taming the high cost of college. And his stated mission is to help families like yours to save time and money and reduce stress in college planning so your offspring's college dream becomes a reality. Hello, Brad, and welcome to Middle Age Can Be Your Best Age.
Hi there. It's good to be here.
Well, it's early autumn, and let's say your son or daughter is a junior or senior in high school. He has no definite plans yet for college, but you know they want to go, and you want to get together with him or her to begin the college planning process, including finances, to be proactive rather than reactive. Where do you start? What's a good place to get started on this?
Yeah, I guess the most important thing is you go ahead and get started.
Yeah.
If your parents have a senior, then hopefully you're well into the process. If your parents have a junior, now's the time to get started. A lot of families will put it off, and they won't start their junior year, or they'll wait till late in their junior year.
Yeah.
And the reality is, go ahead and get started early in the junior year. I've had a lot of people tell me they started too late. I've never had anyone tell me they started too early.
No, that's for sure. Of course, it's sometimes difficult, I would think, for high school students to really choose the college they want to attend when they're just juniors, but you can still get start talking about that kind of thing, I guess. And
absolutely. So you can divide college planning into two areas. One is what the student needs to do and what the student's ready to do, and that's absolutely true. There's a lot of juniors out there that don't really know what they're looking for in a college, and they're just getting started. But you can separate off some of the stuff that mom and dad need to do, like are you saving and investing for college? Should you be?
Yeah.
Will you qualify for need-based aid or merit aid? What's the family budget for college? How many kids do you have? I mean, all those kind of stuff you can do ahead of time. And then as the student matures and starts doing college visits and figuring that out, at least you have a frame of reference then. So you can kind of divide it into two things. One, we need to get the student involved. We need to do college visits. We need to do test planning. We need to do that kind of stuff.
Yeah, that's for sure.
That depends on the student. But mom and dad also need to talk amongst themselves and decide how much they want to spend, what their goals are for college. Is it, you know, for a lot of parents, it's, well, we got to get an education so that they can find a good career.
Yeah.
Other parents, we want them to have that college experience.
Yeah, that's
true. So although it might be cheaper to stay at home and go to the local community college, for a lot of parents, that's not their goal. Their goal is, you know, get them off on a campus somewhere, living in a dorm, or, you know, going off and having that college experience. Because
that's something
that they experienced or didn't experience or wish they had experienced.
Yeah.
And that's part of the puzzle. So, I mean, college also becomes a decision of, well, what is worth it? How much are we willing to spend?
Yeah. Well, if at some time before your children start college, what are some good ways to save and invest? And what's the absolute minimum time frame needed to accumulate any kind of advanced saving and investing that would work? And how, where in the heck do you put your money these days to earn a decent return while you're not risking on the stock market or whatever? You know you need it in a year or two, and so you don't want to be doing crazy things with it.
Right, and that's absolutely true. I mean, for some people, you know, you are saving and investing in the very short term. So maybe all you do is put it in very conservative bank accounts or bank-like investments.
Yeah.
But in addition to that, you might be able to save, and although you're getting low interest, you might be able to get some tax benefits as well by using a Coverdell or a 529 plan.
Yeah,
so you can accumulate the money.
What are those Coverdell and 529 plans, just for out of total ignorance on my part?
Yeah, so they're plans that are designed to help families save for college.
I see.
So, and they're primarily there, you know, the benefit is primarily tax benefits.
Yeah.
So you invest for college, and you can invest however you see fit.
Yeah.
As far as you can be very conservative in bank account-like things, or you can be very aggressive in mutual funds and that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
And then you get some federal tax benefits and some state tax benefits, potentially.
Yeah.
That, you know, so that's why a lot of people would use them, because they get potentially some tax-free growth and some of those types of things.
So you invest with before-tax dollars then in these kind of...
No, it'd still be after-tax dollars most of the time.
Oh, that's too bad. I thought it was like a 401k or something.
Yeah, no, not quite like a 401k. Not quite that good. But at least the growth is potentially tax-free.
Yeah, no, that's true. And of course, also, that if you have to fund all your college, say, on a pay-as-you-go basis, you fund your child's college in 4 years, do you get tax deductions for those contributions to pay the tuition and all that, or...?
Sometimes. So there's a publication out there that the IRS puts out there, but there's five or six different areas that you save around education.
So
you can potentially deduct. There's a credit out there. You might be able to use savings bonds and avoid taxes.
Yeah.
Just paying tuition bills, you might get to take a credit. There's the 529 type savings plans. There's deductible student loan interest. So there are a number of different things that will help, but it's certainly not going to be the – and, again, you just want to be do as efficiently as you can.
Yeah. No,
you know, a lot of families are going to spend $20,000 to $40,000 a year on college per student.
Right.
But if you can do it as efficient as possible, it just makes sense to do the planning.
Yeah. Well, besides getting accepted in the college of your choice, we want to maximize our son's or daughter's financial aid. And what steps – should we take to increase college financial aid offers? Do we do that before they're accepted to a college, or do we wait until they're accepted, or how does that work? What's the best way to go about that?
Yeah, you want to do your planning well ahead of time, because as an example, I'm often sitting down with families where the question becomes, are we going to pick the colleges we really, really like and then pay for them?
Yeah.
Or are we going to figure out what these colleges cost and then decide if we're going to be willing to pay for them? So for some people, budget is a big piece of the puzzle. You know, doesn't matter how much we like the college. If we can't afford it, we're not going.
No, that's true.
Other parents are, well, you know, we probably can afford it. We just have to decide if we want to or not. So
colleges are open then to you discussing finances even before, say, your son or daughter is accepted, or? Or won't they talk to you until they are?
It's kind of like buying a car, right? If you talk to the salesman and you say, how much is the blue car over there?
Yeah.
A lot of times, if they don't really know who you are and you walk in cold, they're going to say, well, there's a sticker in the window.
Yeah.
But if you test drive three or four cars and you build a relationship with the salesman, and then you say, all right, I'm interested in that blue car over there. What does it cost? You say, well, the sticker price is this, but we've got some incentives, and we've got this, and this is going on. So somewhere in this neighborhood, and you say, okay, let's go in your office and let's negotiate the price.
Yeah,
now, colleges work the same way in that you cold say, well, what are your college cost? We'll say, well, it's published in our brochure. You know, we've got the top numbers. What's harder to figure out is how much might you get in scholarships and how much might you get in grants and other things that would help you pay that big number.
Yeah. Obviously, if you look for early acceptance from colleges, and then gives you plenty of time then to talk to, say, three or four colleges or whatever you're looking at, and then talk to the financial aid packages of those that accept you. And that would probably be a good way to go, I would think, on that. But,
right. And actually, in a lot of cases, when you get it down to your short list, you know, my student's going to apply to these five or seven colleges or whatever it might be. If you've done your planning well, you should have a pretty good understanding of what those five or seven colleges will cost you, and whether or not you're going to qualify for scholarships, and whether or not you're going to use loans, and whether or not you may not have every detail, but you at least have an inkling. It shouldn't be a surprise.
Yeah. No, and the key thing
the end.
To point out is you should be proactive rather than reactive, so that you're kind of managing the process rather than letting the colleges or universities manage you, and that makes a lot
absolutely.
Of sense.
Absolutely. You know, 20 years ago and 30 years ago, when parents went to college, that's kind of the way it worked. You know, kind of last minute, you decided I'm going to go to the local state university, and you signed up and off you went. And that's an expensive way to do it at this time and place.
Well, beyond the colleges themselves, many companies and nonprofit entities offer partial or full scholarships. Where should you go to learn about eligibility for these kind of things and how to apply for them?
Yeah. So I guess there's a couple of different places you can go, and I actually just put together a great tutorial called The Parents' Guide to Scholarships.
Oh.
And that's available on my website. But I guess the short answer is working with the colleges themselves. There's internet sites where you can do some searching. Where mom and dad work and where mom and dad play may offer scholarships. So if you belong to a union, the corporations you work for may provide scholarships, those kinds of things. And then the stuff the student's involved in. If they're a musician, or if they're a poet, or if they're an athlete, or if they're a, you know, fill in the blank, whatever they are, there's probably some scholarships associated with all the things that we've talked about.
Yeah, that's for sure. Well, I saw a recent survey recently. This really surprised me. Where it, I think it was in, I can't recall the magazine, but probably one of these money magazine type things that supposedly rated colleges based on how much you get for your money. And surprisingly enough, some of the really expensive but outstanding academically rated schools weren't rated all that high. Can you offer some suggestions on resources that we and parents and our offspring can use to find a better value? You know, it's like that article said, it's not all about the cost, it's what you gain out of the education. But how do you judge that, or where do you go to determine value?
Right. Well, so there's some great websites that people use in the search process. Things like the College Board has a great website called Big Future.
Oh, I see.
And that's a good place to learn about colleges and kind of some basics of what it takes to get accepted and average prices and average scholarships and that kind of stuff. And then from there, you can also look at CapEx, which they just bought out a company called MeritAid.com, and MeritAid did a good job of providing lists of scholarships available at any particular college.
Oh.
So that was a great resource. So if you type MeritAid.com into your web browser, it'll actually forward you to CapEx now, because CapEx just bought MeritAid and merged them together. But those websites provide a lot of great information. My own website at tamingthehighcostofcollege.com has a lot of podcasts and information on how to plan and pay for college. We've got the scholarship tool that I just mentioned. That's at tamingthehighcostofcollege.com/scholarships.
Yeah,
where we've got some video tutorials on how to find scholarships. So there's a lot of resources. And then the colleges themselves are a wealth of information, both their websites and just talking to them in person. And
yeah, that's for sure. No, it's
getting a feel of what they offer.
Well, I thought, as you point out, sending your kids to college, especially if we have several attending at once, can have a significant impact on savings. And there's any suggestions on how to coordinate college and retirement planning so that they both turn out well?
Yeah, I guess the first thing, again, is to plan well. The challenge I see with a lot of families is they don't really know if they're on track for retirement. So
yeah,
you say, well,
amazing.
I'm about to spend an extra... I'm sorry.
I was just going to say it's amazing when you see in magazines or newspapers how poorly planned so many retirements are and how little attention people pay to that ahead of time. But obviously you should coordinate that with your college planning, I would think.
Right. Well, let me give you an example of that. I was sat down with a gentleman a couple of years ago whose daughter really wanted to go to NYU because she was a performing artist and that was a great place for her to be. But it was going to cost the family $40,000 a year.
Ouch.
And this is the first of four children. So now you say, well, $40,000 a year times 4 years times four kids. I mean, that just got to be a really big number. So
yes, it did.
And he had a pretty, you know, he was making a good living. So it's not like he couldn't afford to do it. But the real question was, should we spend that kind of money or not? And it's obviously for everybody, it's a personal decision.
Yeah.
But what we had to do with him was figure out, well, is what he's doing right now going to prepare him for retirement?
Yeah.
And if it is, then if he wants to, you know, spend his money on college instead of a new boat or spending it on a vacation home, I mean, that's the reality of most middle-income and upper-middle-income families.
No, that's very true. And in that case, you'd have, you think about all four of your kids and you want to treat all of them, fairly. But on the other hand, maybe you work out something that you give such dollars to each kid and the ones that want to go to the really expensive schools maybe have to need the scholarships or have to work part time or whatever. I don't know how you do that with all
right.
the children like that.
Yeah, exactly. And I've had some families where they're equal in as far as dollar amounts, and I've had other families where what they considered fair was to each their needs. So if students
true.
That were doing really well and wanted to go to a strong school, but it was going to cost more, the parents were willing to pay more. Because they felt that student earned it.
Yeah, that's a good. Those are all the kind of things I guess that are involved in planning for college. Well, you mentioned some of it. Tell us about some of the services that you provide as a college funding consultant, and how can parents contact you or find out more about your services.
Mm-hmm. Well, I offer a podcast on college planning, and that's at tamingthehighcostofcollege.com.
I see.
And it's also called Taming the High Cost of College. So if you search in iTunes or wherever you get your podcasts, it should pop up.
Yeah.
I also do consulting through my business at BaldridgeCollegeSolutions.com.
I see.
And we've got a lot of free resources over at the Taming site as well. So as I mentioned, we've got the scholarship guide for busy parents. That's at TamingTheHighCostOfCollege.com. /scholarships, and that's completely free. It's four videos that kind of walk you through the scholarship process and, kind of give you a head start. It's not going to teach you everything you need to know, but it'll teach you enough for you to kind of get started and get working.
Now, you're in the Milwaukee area. Say I live in Tampa, Florida or something like that. Do you consult with people all around the country, or is it mostly just people in the Wisconsin area that you provide your consulting to?
Yeah, it's select states. I'm not licensed everywhere, but where I am licensed, it's been as far away as the Virgin Islands.
Oh.
So we can work, through remote systems, phone calls and Skype and that kind of stuff.
So they should check in on your website. Just where that would be that BaldridgeCollegeSolutions.com,
yes.
And they can check to see if it's available in your area. Well,
right, or just give our office a call, and we'd be happy to figure that out for you.
Yeah, that sounds great. Well, in conclusion, how time flies. It seems like just yesterday that your son or daughter was starting preschool, watching Sesame Street, or being fitted for braces. Now only a year or two until college, and you suddenly realize how much it's going to cost. And paying for college is certainly a scary frontier, and life's expenses go on, mortgages, health insurance, groceries, commuting, et cetera. And where will your college funding come from? And for some answers, I highly recommend our guest today, Brad Baldridge, and his website, TamingTheHighCostOfCollege.com. And as a certified financial planner and a college funding consultant, Brad can help you and your sons and daughters obtain the education they deserve at a cost that won't break your bank. And you can also fit college retirement funding or college funding in with your retirement plans so that nothing comes up short. And thank you so much, Brad Baldrige, for your timely advice.
All right. Thanks for having me.
And now let's all go out and get together with our sons and daughters and make college planning an adventure with us in charge rather than a trauma, which it is for so many people. And please tune in again next week for Middle Age Can Be Your Best Age.
You've been listening to Middle Age Can Be Your Best Age, hosted by Roy Richards, an expert on midlife renewal and author of both A Midlife Challenge, Wake Up, and Wake Up, Captain and Crew, Restart Your Engines. You can learn more about Roy and his Middle Age Renewal Training System by visiting his website, middleagerenewal.com.